Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Kirk Gray has joined me again. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Fred. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I asked you offline here that your book is coming out, or by the time this gets posted, it's probably, hopefully the hard copy is available. Do you know if it's going to be available in a couple of weeks?
I think it's scheduled into May, 1st of June.
So we'll be a little bit ahead of that, but there's pre-sales available.
Right.
Right?
Yes, and either you can go to my site, acceleratedreliabilitysolutions.com, or Fred, you have a posting of it, and either one of those will benefit us.
Yeah, we could put that under your, we could put it in the show notes for this show. Make
sure.
It easy. So reliability.fm, look for Speaking of Reliability, and the, I don't know what we're going to call this. I think this chamber is going to be, or this chamber, this episode will be When It's a Time to Buy a Chamber, is my working title. So anyway, you should be able to find it and find a link to Kirk and John. You guys put out a book on Halt and Hast, and I don't recall, or it's the new Halt and Hast?
No, it's
the
called Next. Next Generation Halt and Hast.
Okay.
Robust design of electronics and systems.
Well, that just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
So, you know, I'm trying to carry forward what Greg Hobbs started and he taught me. And we had, hundreds of lunches, I guess, through Storage Tech and on to Walmart. And I think Greg opened the door, but I think there's a lot farther to go in the orientation and looking at the limits as the orientation is, as opposed to trying to quantify life. Which is a very difficult and challenging for at least for solid state electronics.
Yeah.
Mechanical systems lend themselves much more to quantification, and you can see through use of consumables, removable materials such as wear bearings. Those are much more quantifiable, but solid state electronics is a very challenging field to quantify, and I feel that, or I've felt for a long time that that focus on all of electronics as opposed to some devices such as aluminum electrolyte capacitors or batteries for sure, which do have limited life and do need to be modeled and understood. It needs to be more focused on those. At least live quantification can be focused for those special devices or the individual elements that need it. But in general, we need to find limits and boundaries and stretch that to the standard limits of technology. So this is just quick, brief coverage of what the book is, plus how to do Halt and Hast.
Yeah. So have you got your late night talk shows all lined up? You know, all the radio shows. Are you on NPR with Terry Gross and all that good stuff?
I don't think that's going to happen, Fred.
No,
it's not that kind of book, you know. But we do hope a lot of engineering departments will look at it, and companies that are doing development of new products and take up some of the points of it and adapt it. And again, it's a real difficult to write Halt and Hast about Halt and Hast for the wide and broad capability of products out there today, such as everything from consumer electronics to more military use conditions. It's very difficult. That's why the book I brought. Make a point that Halt is an extremely adaptive process to your product and to your end-use environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the key, and we've talked about it here in this podcast a number of times, is Halt is a process. It's not, It doesn't imply a chamber, although I think that's what we wanted to talk about today is when do you buy a chamber. But the idea is, well, anyway, I, despite not going out on the book tour and hitting all the bookshops and talk shows and stuff like that, which I knew you were looking forward to. I'm sorry to hear that. But,
David Letterman, I was booked on it, and then he quit.
He quit. Yeah. So, you know, you look ahead, you plan. Seriously, do check out the book. We'll put a link in the show notes, and it's available through Amazon and other places. And I think it's in pre-sales, you said, until probably in May sometime. The Kindle is available now, though, so you can get a jump start on it.
And we show some of it. Amazon, of course, shows some of the book inside and table of contents, so you can check that out. But
yeah, well, that's cool. I wish you the best of luck with that, and hopefully it
well. John and I want to thank you for your support and promotion.
Right, great. Send money. I appreciate that. That'd be cool. It's one way to show appreciation. Send money.
So the big question is, when do you get a halt chain? When's the best time to do it?
Right. In our last episode, we talked about, you know, what do you do when you're going to the halt lab? And we made, and typically, like, you first you buy your book, right? You learn about, oh, this is something we got to do. And then you go, I'm not going to spend $250,000 to set up a halt chamber. I have to know that it works first. I have to show my organization that this is useful.
Right.
And so that's where I think the HALT labs bridge that, span of time before it makes sense to get your own equipment and set up your own lab. So that's our last episode. How do you deal with a lab? How do you go work with them and set up as the right place to go? But let's say you've done that a couple of times, right? And there's a cost equation, right? That says, if I keep renting this thing, this HALT lab out at $2,000 or $3,000 a day, at some point I could have bought my own chamber, right? And there's some straightforward math there, but I think there's more to it than that.
Oh, there's a lot more to it. I mean, there's a lot of hidden benefits that you don't really realize when you're doing a remote halt as opposed to doing an internal halt. So, you know, such as the convenience of being able to walk down the hall or grab a design engineer that specializes in that circuitry. If you have an internal halt lab, you can bring him down very quickly as opposed to bring him to a remote halt lab, which is very difficult sometimes to schedule his time, your time, and the HALT lab's time down. You know, they've got other customers. So, you know, there's just a lot of being able to evaluate at any instance a subsystem or whatever. There's just a real huge, and it's not very, it's not easy to quantify that benefit, mm-hmm. in monetary, what it costs to take an engineer traveling a couple hours every day.
Well, I had a lab one time that we used that argument to buy some equipment. We were buying a scanning acoustic microscope, and the lab manager said, if we have that chamber, if we have that equipment here, you avoid the day lost to ship the unit to the lab, get the results, and bring it back. And he says, if I can get the answer a day sooner, that's worth money to me. I'll sign off on this. And I was like, wow, that's great.
Yeah. And having the spare parts there, you know, because it's your facility, or having any, you know, optional supporting equipment if it's your facility, things like that. They're just, it's very hard to, you know, quantify that. But
well, it gets you to where you can get to results quicker. And so if I do it externally, let's say it's like 2-3 hours away, and I have to delay the testing by 2 days because I needed an extra part, or I needed the right person to take a look at it, or whatever.
Another sample. Yeah.
Right. That costs me 2 days.
Right.
And 2 days in a time to market intensive product, well, that costs money. That means I have less options to solve the problem. I have less, you know, because all the other parts of your product development are moving. You're locking down contracts with suppliers. You're locking down design decisions every day. So every day, it costs money to delay knowing what you need to update or fix.
Right, and any change that you might find from the halt could be you know, a part change or something like that. Mm-hmm. So just having the variety of like of second source parts in your lab to be able to use another component and do quickly walk down the hall and go through the hall mm-hmm. on that second source is it's hard to quantify that benefit, but it definitely is there. And you once you start seeing it, and also I think a real strong part of getting people to see the benefit of HALT or how it can be a benefit is having the design engineer that may have had a problem on previous predecessor product, and he's able to see that you were able to show that limitation and bring out that defect. You may never get him to in a remote HALT lab because he's, you know, the design engineers are the top guys and very difficult to get their time sometimes. But if you build the support much easier of the process and understanding by having the HALT lab. So you can understand, I can understand a company that's, 10 people may have a total budget of $300,000 for the year. They certainly can't go out and buy a $150,000 chamber. So plus the supporting equipment. So that's certainly a...
well, that brings up, well, I mean, how often, if I'm going to the HALT lab, if I'm designing a product and it's my only product, and I'm going to take, say, 3 prototypes there this year,
mm-hmm.
right? Just on the top of my head, let's say each venture off to the HALT costs me $10,000.
Right.
That's $30,000. I my payback is, you know, many, many years to bring a chamber in.
Right.
But if I'm running, if my organization has got 5 or 6 products, and that would be 15, 20 prototypes or cycles possibly where HALT would really make an advantage. And then, I've got some products where I have, you know, an issue with no trouble found from the field. And I know firsthand that a HALT process helps you to shake out why the customers are returning it to you sometimes.
Yeah, and if you can demonstrate that to your management, you know, that you found this $30,000 or maybe even $100,000 problem in the field or resulted in $100,000 cost to the company, and you showed it in a few minutes in the chamber, you could reproduce it. I think you've got a pretty good business case right there.
You only have to use it once and it pays exactly. for itself. But it's, I think there's that argument, but there's also just having the chamber available.
You find
all these other sources of use for it, things that in and of themselves you wouldn't go out and contract a lab for.
No.
But you do more exploratory work, you work with more components and subsystems, and
you can do evaluations. For instance, power supply. You've got, if you're in a PC market, you've got 10 vendors to choose from for the same exact ATX mm-hmm. power supply. Okay. So if you had a chamber in the house, you could use that chamber to do vendor evaluation of their limits. And mm-hmm. of course, the more the higher the range of operation or the delta between hot and cold operation probably gives you a good indication that it's going to be a more robust and reliable device and subsystem.
Well, it just opens up so many more possibilities that internally. And then I think you touched on the point of, well, if it finds a major problem, it pays for itself right on the spot. And that doesn't matter whether you're in an internal lab or external. But each time you use the chamber, whether it's an external lab or not, is track what use it was, what kind of decisions it impacted, and what value it returned.
Right. You may not consider, I mean, you may consider an alternative to a full, what it was called. A
HALT. Hold on a second. HALT. Do you have a HALT chamber in there? You're running or is that a vacuum going or something?
Oh, that's my little fan from the laptop. It's, keeping that Arrhenius equation in check.
Good grief. What kind of laptop do you got? It sounds like it's turbocharged or something.
Sorry. I'll move farther away from it if it's that loud. But anyway, just talking about HALT chambers and the HALT lab, I think a lot of companies can use a small thermal chamber. You know, you don't have to. I think a big consideration also is if you're going to do some production in your facility and you might want to. This is where the HALT, quote, HALT chamber, where it's combined environments, really becomes its most powerful, is when you're doing some production and you want to find particularly manufacturing related defects, which you don't want to find in HALT. You don't want to find manufacturing issues. You want to find local design.
Right.
So that's another consideration. If you're going to start a pilot production in your facility, I certainly recommend very strongly that you consider HALT pass chambering. They do the same thing.
Do the screening, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's the having the chamber, and it's funny. I every time I think of this topic, I think of all the labs I've gone to where they take you down to the HALT chamber, and you can recognize it walking down the hallway because the above the doorway is cut out where they had moved the chamber through the opening. They had to make the opening bigger.
And also the oxygen sensor alarm.
Yeah, that's right. And I was like, wow, all right. Yeah, we weren't planning ahead when we built these buildings for HALT chambers, but you see it so often. And I've asked many different people, why did you decide to get the HALT? And the number one reason was, or there's two main reasons. One was we found that we're going to the lab too often. So the payback period got to be within a year or so. It's just straight economics of doing rental versus own it. And then two was, we can get to answers quicker. We can do more testing and get answers faster. And that has a value to a development lab.
Fred, isn't that the ultimate of what we're trying to do in accelerated testing?
Right. And if you just shorten the time to get to the results of accelerated testing, all the better. So, you know, I've had clients that have flown across country and, you know, and FedEx parts out and got to the lab, and it's like a 2 or 3 week setup just because of the distance involved.
Right.
And they get up and they 2 days into the lab, the testing, they find all this great stuff and they're back on the airplane and going off to make differences. And they called me back and said, you know, what can we do to shorten this time frame? How can we make, and we did a lot of logistics things to, as soon as the prototype was available, they were ready to run the test. And at some point, even that was too long. They said, we just need to get a chamber ourselves. And then went off and bought it. But they had to prove it to themselves. That's a big capital investment for most organizations.
It is.
And so having the when and where it provides value, whether it's in a proposal that you're making to create a HALT lab within your organization, or even if you're working with an outside lab, is what can it do for you? And then as you get results, as you find things, as you make changes to design, as you discover failure mechanisms, is quantify. You know, this design issue would have affected every product, and it avoids that warranty cost here for this amount of money. Those things start to add up, and then you that builds a pretty compelling package that it's time to buy a chamber.
Right.
And so
I would say if you know, you can look at that in stages too, that you might buy a small chamber, a thermal chamber that doesn't have vibration capability because those are a lot less expensive. Mm-hmm. You might consider a used chamber because those sometimes are on the market and there's alternatives to that. Even mechanical refrigeration chambers, mechanical systems, so not the, you know, liquid nitrogen, are very useful. And you can find limits with those that it's not maybe $30,000 to $50,000 chamber. You can actually get good information on.
Yeah.
Just voltage margining and voltage limits, other things you can do without a chamber. Frequency margining, frequency, you know, that's part of HALT, but it doesn't require any chamber. That's
right.
Why HALT is a philosophy, not a chamber. But HALT chambers, the combined environments, really shine when you're looking for latent defects in the product and variation in the manufacturing. That's where the combined environments where you're producing fatigue damage as rapidly as you can through thermal cycling, vibration, power cycling at the same time, really do accelerate the discovery of latent defects and make them patent or easily detectable.
Yeah. Well, I think that just made it a pretty decent summary right there. So let's use, as you're listening to this and maybe the previous one that Kirk and I recorded episode, is that combination of going to a lab, whether internal, external, how to make the most of that. But then at some point, you're probably going to face that question of, should we buy our own chamber? And so hopefully we've outlined a quick way to think through that beyond just the obvious rental versus ownership type equations. It's can provide value in lots of different ways within your organization. And we outlined a few of those. But if you've got other comments or questions that are related, well, to HALT in particular for Kirk and I, or other topics that you hear here on Speaking of Reliability, or possibly something that we haven't talked about yet, let us know. Get in touch with us at reliability.fm. You know, leave us a comment or shoot us an email to say, hey, why don't you talk about this? Or here's a question for you, things like that. We really appreciate it. We'd love to hear from you.
And I'd like to make a pitch for your other there to know and speaking of reliability speakers, because, you know, I've listened to some, even though I'm certainly doing these, I found a lot of information from you and Carl and you and Andre, and I think it's an excellent series to also, get different sides of the whole reliability programs and philosophies. And so I would encourage our listeners to look at the other podcasts or listen to the other podcasts. And I think some of them have been very excellent. And I've learned some things too.
All right. Great. Well, appreciate that, Kirk. I just talked to James Kovacek.
I have a problem with Schuckelberg.
Yeah, me too. So anyway, James is putting together a podcast, and we hope to launch it, I think, in May. Don't hold me to that. James and I are still working out all the moving parts of getting a podcast series up and running. But his will be more focused on the maintenance world, asset management world. So we're looking to expand the portfolio of the reliability.fm. And if you as a listener, if you've ever thought about, well, I can do that. I can get behind a microphone and do a show, and maybe an interview show or a discussion or tutorials, let us know. And we've got room on reliability.fm. It's set up as a podcast network, and it may make sense to list your show under the network, and that would be great. So anyway, thanks, Kirk. I think we've kind of talked about how do you get started and whether you buy a chamber or not. And I know in previous episodes we talked about, what to do while you're testing and doing what to do with results and a bunch of other questions. I look forward to hearing from our listeners, see what kind of questions or comments that would generate some more episodes for us. I think that would be the way.
Feedback is very important.
Certainly is. All right. Well, let's wrap it up there, Kirk.
Okay. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.